70% of people feel they don't have the skills to be successful at their job.
That's a lot, man.
So there's a number of different ways that organizations work to develop their people. There's a lot of the traditional models, whether that's boot camps, training, access to online courses. But the data shows that, you know, leaders need more. People want more and people expect more. But clearly based off the data, those alone are not solving the gap and the challenge that are out there for both leaders and folks with their skills. And so that's where we see that the models that are being leveraged frequently can have challenges is the lack of personalization.
Founded in 2017, Startwell is Toronto's independent hub for innovators to collaborate. Our podcasts relate perspectives from the world's most diverse urban population to reflect unique insights into global business, media, and culture.
So today I'm joined in studio by Mac Jabera from Atrium. He's the co-founder of a leadership training company.
Leadership development.
Development.
Company. Yeah.
You can't train people. You have to develop their skills.
Exactly. That's it.
So tell us about what you do. Let's jump into actually what is Atrium? Let's start with that.
Yeah, 100%. I can give a quick backstory of why Atrium is the starting point, why Atrium really started with the lived experience of myself and my co-founder, Emma. That lived experience came from, our career journeys and moving from independent contributors and teams up to, fortunately, having a seat at the executive table. And for both of us, we were super fortunate that the companies we had worked with in our careers had invested tens of thousands of dollars into our development as we continued to level up. And both of us had the lived experience that we felt the organizations, although we were super grateful they invested, that a lot of what they spent money on was not impactful. And by far, what had the biggest impact on our careers as we continued to progress was, we could remember it down to the sentence, person, place, was getting advice, coaching, mentoring, someone to listen, and specifically somebody who had been in our shoes before or somebody that we wanted to be when we grow up. And so that was really the inspiration behind Atrium. And so Atrium's a leadership development platform and model. Our methodology for leveling up and developing leaders is through hyper-personalized learning and development experiences.
Okay.
Pairing those leaders up with industry experts. So what that means, somebody typically 5, 10, maybe 15 years ahead of them in their functional area of expertise. Yeah. Someone who's been there and done that, that they spend one-on-one time with
for
strategic growth advice, coaching, mentoring, really depending on their needs.
But this is a curated service. Like, you pair people together, you find
100%.
It's not like Bumble or whatever for corporates.
There's no swiping right or left. we support to make sure that it's the perfect match, because that's really part of the magic of our model.
And then, so it's not just the introduction and putting people together, but there's handholding and programming of some kind. Like, how do you curate experiences and then ensure that there's some progression
developed? Yeah, 100%. So we are firm believers that actionable development really comes from a high level of personalization, and that's something that's going to continue to push forward as things innovate. So what that means is we work really, really closely with our clients, so the companies, to understand their business objectives.
Yep.
From there, we're hand in hand with the leaders that are participating in our programs, working directly with them to build out custom development plans and journeys. And from there, we take that information to make the perfect match, to make sure that they're paired up with the right person to learn from.
So wait, how long have you guys been doing this for? And tell me a little bit about your co-founder and how you met your co-founder.
Yeah, 100%. So we launched this September 2023.
Okay, this is new.
Yeah, so last year we launched as out to the market with Atrium, which has been great. It's been an amazing ride so far. And Emma, as it happens, is a connection, friend of my wife. Okay. And so we initially met through my wife, both started having what seemed like very innocent conversations at the time.
About the same kind of topic all the time. It's exactly. Like, I can't wait till playdate time because I want to talk about, I don't know if you have kids, but.
No kids yet. The whole thing. No kids yet. Yeah, but that's essentially how Emma and I met. And like many things do, innocent conversations at the start. Yeah. And really aligned around our lived experience. And that's what really created the spark.
Man, that's cool. So I guess some of those early discussions where you guys were finding your simpatico.
Yeah.
Right. And then before it became about like, let's start a company.
Yeah.
What were some of the main things that you guys jammed on is like pain points from your common experience. Mm-hmm. And then also like how you both landed on what should be a solution. I assume that's where it came from before. It was like, hey, yeah, we're totally on this.
Yeah.
Let's start a company.
100%. So here's a bit of the journey.
Yeah.
It literally started with that amongst some other folks in our immediate network that were either facing the same challenge as leaders of companies in terms of leveling up their folks and developing their leaders, but also speaking to other leaders within our network around their lived experience. So it started with us. Step two was, okay, that's cool. Does anybody else feel this way? Is there... or is it just us? And as we went out there to the market, things became really, really clear that there is a severe gap out there in terms of how companies can develop their leaders. And
well, let's talk specifically. So you're like, okay, Emma, we got to do something about this. We think we can do this. So I got this guy, Fred, I know. Let me message him on LinkedIn. Fred, does your life suck? I can make it better.
Yeah. You know?
What's that whole process look like?
Yeah, so in terms of the start of our conversations.
Yeah, like how did you start saying, okay, we can actually do something about this?
Yeah, 100%. So for us, we were pretty methodical in terms of getting out there and understanding the market. So a lot of research in place. And if you look at the data, it's pretty compelling and consistent. There's about $360 billion spent annually on leadership development and corporate training.
Yep.
Yet 75% of managers and leaders say they're dissatisfied with what they receive from their company.
Because what do they receive? Typically it's like a PDF or something?
So
like, here's a document. This will make you better.
Yeah.
Complete it in this timeline. Otherwise it expires.
100%. So there's a number of different ways that organizations work to develop their people. There's a lot of the traditional models, whether that's boot camps, training, access to online courses. There's a lot out there, and some of it is effective, but the data shows that leaders need more, people want more, and people expect more. And then the other compelling data point that we see all the time is 70% of people feel they don't have the skills to be successful at their job.
That's a lot, man.
A lot of people.
70% of people, let's repeat this for our audience here. 70% of people don't feel like they have the skills required for their job.
Yep.
So this goes back to what we were saying off camera, right? This idea of this fear paradigm in kind of corporate Canada.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm in a job and I don't feel like I'm enabled to even be better at getting what I need done, you're just like swimming in the deep end with, you know, a punctured floaty.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
That's scary.
It is scary, and it's real. And so for us, you know, that research in the market was super compelling. That coupled with, in-depth conversations with organizations of every size, whether it was a one-person small business, whether it was talking to a bank or a large enterprise organization, we heard very consistent themes throughout those conversations. And those pointed to a couple of key areas, which were every organization will tell you that they know that the performance and growth of the business has a direct correlation to the performance and capability of their leadership team.
Mm-hmm.
And they would all say they know their people want more. And then many of them would say, we're doing what we know.
Yeah.
We're buying what's being sold to us. We know it's not necessarily solving the problem of growing our people at the same pace of the business. And so we're open to other ways. Exactly.
Right. Is it like that? Like people, they do their quick cursory procurement on this.
Yeah.
They're like, these are the solutions that I can buy.
Yep.
Which again, just state them for us again. I think you rattled them off earlier.
Like, yes, there's traditional training.
Yeah.
There is bringing in external trainers. There is access to online courses, lunch and learns. There's a variety of things that are out there.
Right.
And they do have impact, and you can do them well. But clearly, based off the data, those alone are not solving the gap and the challenge that are out there for both leaders and folks with their skills.
Yeah, because it sounds like that the handoff, like when you're handing that responsibility off to an external programmatic, like systematic course,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to be tailored to the solution and the nuances of who is the person that's in that seat. It's like, let's create more resources for that person to bring back into their role, and hopefully when we replace them, they're you know, repeatable.
Yeah.
Then it's like other stuff requires an onus on internal staff to be able to manage
it. Yeah.
Like, how are people going to like program lunch and learns?
100%.
If they're not sure what the problems are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we've spent a lot of time with this problem space. Clearly, it's you know, it's our passion. It's what we're excited about and what we love to do each and every day.
Yeah.
And the word you use there.
Did I swear? Sorry, Mom.
Mom. So the word you use there that was really, really important and impactful is tailored.
Yeah.
And so, really what we see with the main challenges with some of the models that are out there and why we think some of that data is so compelling around improvements that need to be made is personalization. No two people are the same. No two leaders are the same.
Right.
You can have two leaders, same level, same role in the same team.
Mm-hmm.
What they need from a development perspective to get to the next level of their career journey can be completely different. And so that's where we see that the models that are being leveraged frequently can have challenges is the lack of personalization.
Yeah.
And the expectation from us in our consumer world now that personalization is what we receive. And so we see that as the big challenge. As programs scale, they become generic.
Right.
And when they're generic, they are less relevant. When they're less relevant, they're less actionable for the individual.
Yeah.
And without being able to take action, you forget a lot of what you learn.
Yeah, you forget what you learn if you're not putting it into practice.
100%.
And ideally, we want people to put things into practice at their company to be able to, like, you know, level up the capacity of also the rest of their team members and who they're leading, right?
100%.
So, okay, it's been a year-ish?
Yeah.
What's the client base look like that you guys are serving? Is it majoritively kind of like a D2C, or are you finding that there's businesses that are signing on saying, okay, we got like 50 or 1,000 leaders.
Yeah.
Or the whole team should be leaders and be autonomous.
Yeah.
You know, how are what's the mix look like?
Yeah, right, so here's what we do. Here's what we find works and why. We're obviously evolving and learning every single day.
Sure.
But we are a B2B business. So we help companies accelerate performance and growth through leveling up their leaders through our development model.
Okay.
And so we're B2B. And why that's really important is, one, there's an expectation from leaders that their organization is investing in their development to continue to improve. And and that's really important around attracting the best talent, retaining the best talent, is people want to see that their companies are investing in them.
Mm-hmm.
The second piece that is really important and why we're B2B is the alignment between the company objectives and the leader's development path need to be in sync.
Right.
For the most successful experience.
Yep.
And that's not just the most successful experience for the business, but that's so that that leader does really well in that company.
Yeah, so right, right.
We have a focus around supporting companies, organizations. We spend about 75% of our time supporting high growth tech scale up companies.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Yep. And then the other 25% would be outside of tech.
So within tech, Is this something where, you know, like a Georgian Partners or like a private equity firm brings you in when they give the Series A to say, okay, de-risk our investment?
That's not where we're focused today. Certainly, VCs do want to spend a lot of time in terms of providing value add to their organizations. But for us, we're purely focused on, or spend most of our time so far actually working with the with the company, with the executive team there. Yeah.
Huh. Okay. So any client examples you can name?
I don't know if I can name them publicly, but we do a lot of work, SaaS, fintech, a bit of work in the health tech space. Those would be the key areas that we're focused on.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. Let's drill down on one of those. So if you're working in health tech,
yeah,
would you be connecting? I want to get a sense of this kind of contextual mentorship.
Yeah.
So would you be pairing like business folks with other business folks that are in industry, or looking at it holistically and saying, okay, if someone's in, like even if they're a challenger brand,
yeah,
but they're innovating in healthcare,
yeah,
using technology,
yeah,
you're going to pair them with mentors that are at in the hospital system, that are maybe in whatever institutional framework for healthcare that they can get insights from for to bring back into the organization, but also learn from that level of experience of frustration with the problem the company is solving, that kind of thing? Or is that more too granular?
That is, I'll share a bit of what we see. So how we prioritize the importance of the match with the right expert, the most weight is actually placed on the functional expertise.
Okay.
So you're a leader in sales.
Yep.
You're learning from somebody who's been through your growth challenges specifically within sales before. That's the most important.
Yeah.
And so that's usually the starting point, is really around the functional experience.
Yep.
The secondary could be industry.
Okay.
It could be, but that depends. We've got some clients that want folks from in industry, certainly nobody coming from a competitor or any sort of conflict of interest there.
Sure.
But we also have some organizations that say, you know what, we're in this space. We actually really look up to, you know, this industry or this area. They've been more innovative than we have in our segment or vertical. We'd love people coming from there.
Right.
And so it's about 50-50 in terms of where the experts are coming from and whether it aligns from an industry perspective or not.
Can we talk about the high level of your methodology? Like you start with a client engagement, maybe there's an initial discovery period.
Yeah.
And start from there where you're like, you're talking to the company.
Mm-hmm.
You're engaging the leader in self-determining this journey.
Yeah.
How does that all flow from there?
Yeah. So typically, and again, personalized and tailored, so no two conversations the same.
Right.
Yeah, but generally where we're starting with our clients is, what are your business objectives? And where are you looking to get to?
Yeah.
And that's most important for us to start with. Layer two of that is, what are the biggest obstacles and challenges you're facing to achieve those? Typically with high growth tech scale-ups, you know, a lot of times it's about growth and getting growth. Next frontier of ARR, NPS engagement, team growth, whatever those metrics might be that are important for them. But we move to the challenges in achieving those targets and their growth objectives, understand the org, and then we start to identify the leaders that we're going to work with.
Yeah.
Build the development plans that are in support of overcoming those challenges or achieving those growth targets.
Yeah.
And then make sure they're paired with the right expert to help them get there in the fastest time possible.
Right.
And so.
Oh, okay. So that's part of it.
100%. We.
So typically, what's the length of engagement that you're looking for?
Yeah. So typically, our programs are ongoing. They're leveraging, you know, the model ongoing. But how we structure it to ensure that the development objectives are extremely relevant to the business objectives, because things change,
of course,
very quickly in today's market across all industries, is we run in 3-month sprints.
Okay.
And so what we do is we set development objectives at the beginning of the program. We do a 3-month sprint. They're typically working with their expert 1 hour every 2 weeks over the 3 months.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the sprint, we assess, ensure that we've delivered on what we intended to in terms of impact and helping level up that leader.
Right.
And that we reassess to understand, do those goals need to continue forward? Do they need to establish new development goals for the next sprint?
Yeah.
Do they need to work with the same expert? Do they need a different expert for the next frontier of development objectives? And we run it in sprints that way.
How do you go about encouraging the participation of mentors?
Mm. In terms of what's the incentive for experts to help?
Yeah, I guess what's the incentive? Yeah, yeah. Sure. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, what's the incentive?
Yeah, so
let's start there.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. The incentive ties to motivations, honestly, and it's one of the beautiful human things that we've learned as we've built this model.
Yeah.
Is most high-performing executives out there want to give back, want to help others, know how hard leadership is and continuing to grow in their career.
Yeah.
But the friction to do so in their own time is incredibly high.
Oh, of course. Like, everyone's got 5 million things to do. And also, it's part of your job, right? Like, you're constantly directing. Like, if it, also, wait, let's dial back a little bit, okay?
Yeah.
What's a leader?
Yeah.
In terms of, like, the profiling of the people that you're going to be helping?
Yeah.
Like, who are leaders?
Yeah, 100%. So I'll give you my perspective on what a leader is as a starting point. I think the biggest misconception is a leader is somebody that's managing people. I think those are two separate things. You know, my personal perspective in terms of what a leader is somebody who inspires action.
Yeah.
And that can be inspiring action to increasing the quality of the work that they're doing. That can be inspiring action to do the right thing more often.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's really around being a member of the team who inspires action in one way, shape, or form that helps positively impact both the business and the team.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily like corporate exec, you know, C-suite people. It could be other folks across the organization that 100%. support any group of people, right?
100%. We've got folks that we will work with that are, week two of their people management and leadership journey. We've got individual contributors. Then we do have C-level executives as well. And so, you know, leadership moves up and down organizations and can really be encompassed in anybody within the org is where it can be and where we support really across the board.
For an audience segment that is, you know, that fits within this people and culture role.
Yeah.
Which is quite large. Like, I think we have 10,000 people on our newsletter subscriber base that fit into these roles, like support, people support and culture.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like there are a lot of struggles that people in those roles face, and especially with the pandemic and managing additional, you know, responsibilities all of a sudden. And they're looking for insights all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for directions on like how to help. Great segment of people in an organization to help.
Yes.
Do you find that those are roles that you help with a lot? Like people in HR, people in like people roles?
100%. Yeah, that's definitely a part of the population that we support. And we've got some absolutely world-class experts in that space. And you're absolutely right. You know, with that function, with that group, a lot of times they really are the unsung heroes of organizations, especially in the tech scale-up community.
Oh, totally. It's like when you're growing a mile a minute and like you've got, you know, founders that are like basically like solution focused.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, we need someone for this.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, do you do that? Like, come over here.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to go through the drama of like finding the right person or the time that it takes. And then you find the person who helps grow the team and suddenly they're the catalyst for facilitating the whole thing's holding together, you know, as it grows. And then they're like, they get burnt out and they leave. And it happened. I keep hearing that over and over and over again. We had someone a few episodes ago that was talking about growing a team from like, I think it was like two people to 200 or 400.
Yeah.
And then they tapped out because they were like, though they got kudos, it seemed like the weight was solely on their shoulders.
Yeah.
And growing an HR team was mm-hmm. difficult. Justifying growing the team when they're doing a great job is always difficult yep. in anything, right?
Yeah.
So
100%. It's hard work, unsung heroes. If the business is growing rapidly, if the business is having challenges, if the business is relocating to a new office, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Those folks are so important and impactful on the organization.
Yeah.
And when done right with the right leader in that role, there's many CEOs I've talked through over the years that's their right hand.
Exactly.
And maybe they're not an obvious right hand. And so when it's done right, it can be absolutely incredible and they're incredibly important to the business. But I think there's a lot of days where it's a bit of a thankless job.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's a good point that like, yeah, when done right, I would definitely, if I was like a venture-backed startup, if I had tons of money and I just had to like burn it in the right way.
Yeah.
Oh man, I'd use human resources
yeah.
as my main yeah. way to flip up capacity. Yeah. Like that's capacity right there.
Yeah, 100%. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and I see the counterbalance, especially mm-hmm. in, you know, when people get stuck, if they're technical founders, they
yeah.
get stuck in the problem.
Yep.
And they're not stuck in the marketing opportunity and connecting with clients.
Yep.
And so they don't understand a lot of the front end of the business mm-hmm. needs to be built from the beginning.
Yep.
Yeah.
100%.
So it's like, let's build it. It's awesome. And then it's like, how do we sell it? Oh, we don't know. And we can't get our next round because we couldn't prove that we sold it. And now we're dead.
100%. And that's exactly where we like to help. The
yeah.
story you just shared is one that's very common to us. And we believe that that you bring in the right experts to support your leaders. You can help bridge that gap and get you to that next round.
Let's philosophize for a second, okay?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the kind of cultural context in the workplace that you see here in Toronto or
sure.
in Canada in general, surrounding this need for mentorship and for
mm-hmm.
knowledge to pass down,
mm-hmm.
even generational knowledge to pass
yeah.
down. Where are we missing things? And where can companies who can't hire you or in different cities that, you know, whatever,
yeah.
if they're listening to this, watching this, what are tips that you can kind of, I guess, observations that you have on the context and
mm-hmm.
recommendations for how people can kind of like, you know, steward mentorship relationships
mm-hmm.
themselves?
So just to clarify the question, what can companies do to help create an environment?
Let's break it into
yeah.
two questions. First question. The need for facilitating
yeah.
relationships is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? What's difficult about people? What's stopping people from
mm-hmm.
finding mentorship relationships and access to knowledge that's
mm-hmm.
living, breathing knowledge
mm-hmm.
In the corporate world?
So a couple of things. If we go major macro,
mm-hmm.
A lot of this would be in the enterprise environment. If we think about a bank,
yeah,
a lot of the folks who are mentors or should be mentors are retiring.
Yeah.
So that's a fact. And baby boomers are exiting the workforce. They hold many of the senior leadership roles within organizations and are your mentor population.
Mm.
And so with them exiting, it's certainly... from an objective perspective, has an impact on the ratio of mentors-mentees out there in the market.
Yeah.
And the world's changed a lot since COVID. And
right.
so I think finding a great mentor has always been something that's intimidating for many people.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work on both sides of the equation. And so there's just a lot of friction there to make it happen. I don't think there's many people you'd speak to that would say that there's not incredible value from that or that they would
right.
love to have it.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's easy to execute. And so I think there's a lot of friction within the relationship. And then obviously post-COVID, all of that gets compounded when things move virtual. And so I'd say those are two big drivers around why it's not necessarily getting easier. out there in the market, and the impact of COVID with virtual as well definitely has impact on it being harder. Would be a big piece from an enterprise perspective.
Right.
And that's within your own company. As I think about high growth tech scale ups, the common story that I hear of where the challenge is capacity.
Yeah, it's one. Like, we have things to do. We can't focus on this right now.
And making those connections outside of your organization. And so if you're not an organization that's got 30, 40, 50,000 employees where there are lots of people you can go for coffee chats with.
Right.
Now you've got an additional layer that you've got to push through, which is finding people outside of the company to support you.
Yeah.
And so that adds another piece. So the friction point there is you got to get out there. And again, that has not become any easier in a virtual world in terms of forming and building some of that human connection.
With the downtown cores being so quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not serendipitously like running into people at coffee or lunch.
Yep,
100%. You're not being invited to those cross-pollination opportunities.
100%.
We see that a lot here, right? Because like Startwell exists for that function.
Yep.
We've replaced downtown in many ways.
Yeah.
Like people host offsites here of all different sizes.
Love it.
It's so brilliant to see like companies coming together, firstly in person, and then saying, oh man, this is great. And they're laughing, and they're having fun. But they're always also kind of bumping into other people.
100%.
And they're like, are you at my company? No, I'm not at your company. Yeah. Oh, I don't even know who's on my team.
100%.
You look like that avatar of Joe. I thought you weren't coming in from Palo Alto.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, I'm at this other company.
Yeah.
But people love it. It's like, wow, I'm not trapped in my box all day long, like on Zoom, you know?
100%.
So I think that I would add to this by recommending any of our audience members who, of course, are not in Toronto and can't, you know, organize offsites and start well, to find places, if it's within their remit, to bring people together within the organization, cross-pollinate them with other organizations, even if it's like your friends group.
Yep.
Do like a co-working day at a restaurant, worst case, you know. Or a coffee shop, or at somebody's house. We hear a lot of this.
Yeah.
Like Airbnbs being rented for corporate retreats.
Yeah.
Where it's like senior executive or anyone really gets their core team and some interesting friends of theirs.
Yeah.
Come, give us a talk.
Like, yeah.
It doesn't need to be formal. Just tell us about 1953 or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so I think that's self.
Good year choice.
That's what my dad was for. It's like, born, not that even like
that was actually a shout out. Yeah, I love it.
So I think there's ways that people can kind of like own their culture and the like, you know, how education and mentorship fits into that culture.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be more relevant and more important than ever before. Like 100%. You said, baby boomers are retiring out.
Yeah.
According to StatCan, like Q1 2024 data that they published.
Yeah.
The level of people exiting the workforce has changed where it used to be 60 plus.
Yeah.
It's gone down in the last couple quarters to 55 plus.
Yeah.
So people are like getting out when they can.
100%.
A lot of that is like, you know, the last 5 years, if you're 55 and you've been senior executive at a corporate enterprise and it's just not fun anymore. And you're kind of like, well, I made some money. I can retire.
Yeah.
Lucinda wants me to like, you know, go to Peru more often.
Yeah.
Like, it's the first time I used Lucinda as my Judy. But like, yeah, like why not? Why wouldn't you exit? And so I think there's another angle on this for anyone listening that is considering culture stewardship is how do you retain knowledge in an organization despite people reaching retirement age?
Yeah.
And how do you create a canon of mentors for your organization, of past employees.
Exactly.
Like everyone assumes, and and correct me if I'm wrong, every single company I talk to, every one of them, that either fires people or has people retire out or has people move to go to other jobs, that file is sitting in the basement and no one looks at it.
Yep.
And you don't reach back to those people and say, hey, how was it when you worked on this problem?
Yep.
You can't talk to that person.
100%.
They're non grata.
Yep.
So I think that that's something that also could be an opportunity for people to learn through and to change expand their knowledge base and mentorship, you know, access.
Yep.
Through.
Yep.
But all this points to, like a need for cultural evolution in the corporate kind of layer of Canada, I feel like, you know, people taking a bit more ownership over their destiny as employees and as companies.
100%. One of my favorite sayings, what's the best that could happen? And yeah, put yourself out there, make some connections. Half the time, that's going to lead you to an introduction or another connection that's going to have really big impact, and you just never know.
I like that. Just flip it upside down. Yeah. Not what's the worst. Like,
what's the best that could happen?
Let's take apathy and let's flip it around. What's the best that can happen?
Yeah.
I feel like there's another thing here too, and I would recommend for anyone listening to this who feels empowered to change their corporate culture to take a look at how performance is assessed and expected. Because normally it's not even assessed. Let's be honest. Most companies don't assess performance. Yeah. It either comes down to the bottom line or avoidance of drama, in my lens.
Yep.
So if you take a look at your organization and you say everything is about make work, that is obvious make work so that bosses don't fire us.
Yeah.
Or otherwise
people. What do you mean make work?
Oh, like 80% of white collar work.
Okay, okay, like okay.
Basically, make work for me means busy work.
Okay, okay.
Keeping yourself busy with some sort of process that justifies you.
Yeah.
And the sad truth is, and this comes with the apathy, I keep hearing this from previous guests. So we talked to someone who has a long strategic marketing background recently, right? Who was saying that statistically, they found in research for the Canadian Olympic Committee that there was growing apathy in Canada, especially in people in their 20s and 30s. And that apathy has resulted into a lack of brand equity of the Canadian brand, which means they're tapped out from society. It's not just even about the company. So the company is almost fighting, I feel like, in the next little while, especially in the HR and talent retention.
Yeah,
they're fighting social ills to create a place of togetherness in belonging to an organization. This is a huge mandate.
Yeah.
No longer are companies like in the 90s or even 10 years ago able to say, people can live their happy lives out there. And when they come into work, they can focus and they can do some good work and they can get rewarded for it.
Yeah.
Now it kind of feels like the world out there isn't as comfortable for people. So how can we make the work place a little bit more comfortable? And these are challenges that we keep hearing people having to kind of deal with. Return to work is the most obvious like kind of question where people are like, you know, people and culture leaders that we've spoken to are like, okay, well, we got the approval for budget to downscale an office but make it into a living room or a rec room. Let's make our office into the rec room. Whether that means, you know, an offsite strategy that involves holidays every quarter. Let's go to the 100%. Beach. Let's go climb a mountain. Let's do something fun together.
Or work from dome. They have at the Sky Dome now for the baseball games. It's called work from dome.
That's pathetic. That is so lame. Really?
Yeah.
With a hot dog and a beer and a game.
Exactly.
And your laptop.
Exactly. It has the Wi-Fi.
Oh, that's see when, when something hits that level of like a meme, then you know there's problems.
Problems.
But so like the idea is that, you know, people in culture, people are trying to say, okay, how do we engage? Because they know that they need to create a place for that engagement to be fruitious for people's lifestyle. And it's about like, okay, how does the work lifestyle, workplace lifestyle enable people's futures?
100%.
Really, right? So I like this idea of leadership development because really it's about cultivating as well that like capacity to seek guidance, but also soundboard and to chase growth personally.
Yeah, 100%. And I think what you're talking about with return to work, with office, with hybrid, all the different variations. We're still early in the curve, I think, is something that's a bit under-discussed out there in the market is, you know, we've worked on site for thousands of years. We've got a pretty small sample size of virtual work, what that means and how to do it right. And I think it's going to take a bit more time before we get there. And I think where we'll land, like usual, it's not going to be one extreme or the other.
Right.
We're going to have in-person companies, we're going to have virtual companies, and we're going to have hybrid companies. And people will align with what works best for them.
Totally.
And it'll end up normalizing.
Yeah. Cheers, man. It was great having you on the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you, sir. It's great to meet you.
Likewise.
Cheers.